You are listening to Kilometer Zero by the Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches.
Well, we're into week three of the Tour de France, and by that time, we're all in the mood for a little diversion, aren't we? We want to go off the beaten track and see what else France has to offer. And on Friday evening, Francois took us on a little journey to meet somebody completely unconnected with the race, but what a fascinating character he was. Robert Eden, the great nephew of Anthony Eden, former British Prime Minister, who is now a winemaker in France. We went to meet him and he was a force of nature. But how did you come across him, Francois?
Well, by chance during the pandemic, I was actually, you know, in the first lockdown. I don't know about you guys, but I did lots of sport, but I did lots of boozing as well, and you know, because I had to regain weight after losing it by running or, you know, riding my stand bike. So I ordered a wine bottles from on the internet, and among the boxes that came, there was one bottle of Chateau Maris in Minervois, that's the region we were, last week, near Carcassonne. That was absolutely outstanding. So I ordered more. I went on to their website and discovered the whole world of winemaking that was a bit different. The more wines I ordered from Chateau Maris, whether red, rosé or white, the better they were. And all of them organic. And I sensed there was a kind of a, you know, different approach to winemaking there. I kind of got in touch with the winemakers and the people working there in that very small village of Féline, Minervois, near Minerve, and realized there was a real character and behind good wine, like behind good cycling or behind good literature or good music, there's always a fascinating personality, and that's what I wanted to discover. So when I saw that, you know, we're going to do the Tour des Flâneurs, and which means, you know, going a little bit off the beaten track of cycling to discover other things about France, I thought it was impossible to miss. You know, Féline Minervois is only about 20 km away from Carcassonne, so it was a good chance to get to see what this guy is doing, to taste his wine, to eat his food, because he's got a little place called Le Grand Café Occitan, which is a gorgeous little place, like the real France, like you expect it, you know, a little square beneath the trees and really brilliant food. And you know, for you guys, listeners of the, you know, of the podcast, I was thinking that for a Frenchman to claim that Britain, you know, is teaching the French, the frogs, how to make wine was actually something you should hear about, because really this man, regardless of his nationality, you know, makes the best of the French landscape and vines.
I've never heard before of somebody drinking wine in order to put on weight after losing it through exercise. That's a new one on me. But Francois, I don't know what I expected when you took us to meet Robert Eden, but it wasn't who we met. Let's hear from him now.
Well, my name is Robert Eden, and I was born in England, and I am here talking to you from the south of France, where we have a vineyard, and we have several vineyards which produce organic and biodynamic grapes, which make organic and biodynamic wine. And I got into that because I had a little mishap around about 18 years old of brewing beer with home brew kits. And I wasn't allowed to sell the beer to the elder boys in the school, and I did, and he got sick, and so, you know, or they got sick rather, and then they complained to matron that Eden had sold them the bad beer, and I got kicked out of school. So this is the thing. And that's a true story, by the way, and that's really what happened. And then I had to get out of England, and so I left, and I got a job pruning vineyards in South Australia.
You really had to get out of England.
Well, I didn't have to get out of England, but my father was not very happy with the situation, shall we say, and maybe he had a position which was quite a public position, so he didn't want to have his, you know, rebel son, yeah, you know, brewing beer in the school and stuff like that.
So. And you fell into wine, so to speak.
Well, because I got the job, because I flew to Sydney and took a next plane to Adelaide, and then just went into the Barossa Valley, because I had always had Hugh Johnson's World Wine Atlas, which is still re-edited several times, a beautiful wine book showing wine regions with maps and labels and stuff like that. And I loved the whole wine world through that. And so I flew to Adelaide, and so got up to the Barossa Valley. And found a job pruning vineyards, which is really the best way to start making wine, because when you prune the vine, right, you're asking the vine to do something in a particular way. And why are you asking it to do it? Because it's got to produce grapes in a particular way. Why are you asking it to produce? Because I want to harvest that in a particular way. Why do you want to harvest that in a particular way? Because I want to make wine in a particular way. So really, pruning is the start of winemaking, and I was lucky enough to start there.
And when did you come to France? What brought you to France?
After Italy, I came here in 1984. End of 1983, early 1984. And I took a train from Florence, which is the capital of Chianti, to Dijon, which is the capital of Burgundy. And then I started my work in French wine in Burgundy. With a great lady there who was a wine broker, an American lady who was broking wines mise en bouteille au château, mm-hmm, which was very important at that time for certain specific wine buyers. They loved the mise en bouteille au château, mm-hmm, and so I worked with her translating, and I didn't speak French at the time, but I learned it on the job. But translating for American buyers, because there we were in the franc and dollar ratio, so there it was about 14-1. So the Americans were all over the all over France. It was very cheap for them, and I was translating for them in the cellars, tasting wine, Burgundy wines, etc.
So, you're now here in Minervois. You were first in Burgundy. Why Minervois? Did you know anything about the wines here? Did you have a kind of a craving for more sun or whatever? What took you here?
Not at all. You should have been there. I knew a lot about different regions in France. And the one area in France which I didn't know about was the Languedoc-Roussillon. And because of this period of where the dollar was strong, there was one variety which was really taking off in California, which is called Chardonnay. And so we had an American importer who came to Boone, right, and asked us as a wine brokers, wine exporters, whatever you like, to find him a cheap Chardonnay. So we said, cheap Chardonnay doesn't exist in Burgundy, and doesn't exist in South Burgundy, in Mâcon, mm-hmm, at all. Right? But he said, go and find me a cheap Chardonnay. We'll do masses of it. It's going big time in California, etc. One of the places which produces cheap Chardonnay at the time was Limoux. Voila. And so I drove here into the Languedoc, and wow. And that was it. That was, for me, the great meeting of the Languedoc. And I remember calling my boss at the time, after I purchased the Chardonnay in Limoux, I remember calling my boss to say my car broke down. It hadn't broken down, right? But I said, I just wanted to... It was just this beautiful region. I was in 1985. It was just absolutely extraordinary. And it still is extraordinary. This is a beautiful, wild, splendid area.
So Chateau Marius existed before you came, but often people say good wine is the meeting between a place and a man. Was it love at first sight when you discovered Chateau Marius, or did you think, there's work to be done.
Well, Mr. Maris, he owned the property. He didn't have any children, so that's why he decided to sell it. And it was a property, and it still is a property, which was not very attractive to touristic buyers, as you were, because it was is a village-based property. So the house is in the village, right, which is right over there, and then the vines are dotted all around the village. So people actually prefer a house sitting on a hill with the vines dotted all around them, and so nobody wanted this property in many ways. And it was super ideal for me because I had many different micro ecosystems in different varieties, which were going to give me particular flavor profiles. I didn't think about this. I didn't dream about this. I had tasted a lot of wine from the Languedoc after when I came down here, after when I said that my car broke down. I tasted a lot of wine from the Languedoc blind, and I got into it a lot. And La Livinière, I knew La Livinière appellation had, from a red wine perspective, really delicious, seductive, very, very smooth, delicious wines. And so that is what I wanted to make in red wine. And when this property came out for sale, I said, wow, yeah, if nobody else wants it, I'll take it. So that's what happened.
So you, when you arrived there, you started, well, very, very quickly, you became a kind of pioneer of organic wine and biodynamic wine and natural wine. From the young guy pruning vines in Australia to becoming you proclaimed everywhere one of the pioneers of organic wine. What happened? What changed your philosophy of the job?
The reality is that the Mr. Maris had a lot of other occupations, and he wasn't capable really of following his soil or his plants in the way that they should be followed. And quite frankly, the soil was dead and the vines were sick. And so that meant you're producing rather bad tasting grapes. And so you can't make good wine from bad tasting grapes. So in 1997, when I bought it, went around, it was a very bad vintage, tasted grapes. Okay. Well, shit, not a problem. We'll forget about that. 1998, absolutely excellent vintage, right? And we tasted the grapes, and they were disgusting, right? So what's going on here? And basically the fact is that you had dead or sick plants in dead or sick and sick soil, right? So what do you do? You go back home with your tail between your legs and say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Or you try and do something with it. And what I didn't know at the time, what I feel really stupid about saying now, is I didn't know that soil we can bring back to life. Soil is one of the few things we can bring back to life. Yeah, because you put live matter back into soil and it rejuvenates the soil. And so you put life back into the soil. And therefore, the plants that are living in that soil are healthy, good, and able to produce what they're meant to produce. Right. So that's where I discovered. And so there are a number of different ways of actually putting life back in the soil. The best way is live matter. What's live matter? Live matter is composted manure, composted vegetable matter. Okay, composted manure. How do you do that? Well, you take a pile of manure and you just leave it in a corner and let it to rot. No, that is not the way to do it. You have to compost manure is a very scientific method. There's several methods. One of those methods is the biodynamic method, and that's how I came to discover the biodynamic method of agriculture through producing biodynamic compost to rejuvenate life in our soil, which is very necessary. And when we saw the reaction that it gave on the compost, right, we said, wow, we've got to study this method further and apply it to the rest of our property and to the whole of our culture.
One of the reasons we're here is because by chance, I must say, I discovered your wines and really fell off my chair. You know, I really love them. I mean, I'm a wine lover, and from time to time you come across something that has just got the right balance of what you like, and there's kind of a organic relationship with the wine you're having. So I was really as you know, willing to meet you and to know how you do that. And so the interesting thing is, you not only did you revive an old chateau that was, well, more or less in decay on dead soil, but you tried lots of very different things, because in the range of wines you're making, there's white, there's rosé, there's reds, but I mean there's the whole range of them you tried very different things on the various little lots you have around, and that versatility, was it something that you planned in the first place?
The beauty of the Languedoc. The beauty of the Languedoc is the versatility. It's almost the rebellious side of France. I mean, basically, excuse me, Francois, but I have to tell you, right? The France is ridiculous because the appellations, which are these beautiful wine growing areas, right? They've let themselves be governed by bureaucracy, by administrative soldiers, right? That's whereas right. It's not the case, right? The case is, right, is that the wine comes from the people that make it. The wine comes from the people that farm those lands, that harvest those grapes from those vines, right? It is not the bureaucrats that decide, right? It is the people that actually decide what the wine is made. And that's what I love about the Languedoc. There's this rebellious nature, and it's not rebellious enough. And I call upon all of us here, to rebel.
Is this why you maybe feel so at home here? Because you strike me as a bit of a rebel yourself. Is that why you found such a happy home here?
I love it. I love it. I love the nature. I love the wilderness. I love the birds of prey. I love the fact that we got the Parc National du Languedoc, which is above us, which is this massive, huge limestone area, which has not been disturbed ecologically for thousands of years, which is a huge ecosystem. We've got Carcassonne, we've got the Canal de Midi. When we irrigate here, we irrigate using rainwater, which is using canals, distribution, what should we say, for us, like canals, French word, but distribution channels, distribution channels, which were constructed in the 1300s, right? And we're sitting out here now on a terrace here under trees, and flowers are surrounding us, and birds are singing, and I don't want to go anywhere
it's
else.
It's not bad, is it? It's not bad.
You are listening to Kilometer Zero by the Cycling Podcast. Powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success.
Hey everyone, it's Sam Brandt here from Team Novo Nordisk. As most of you know, I'm from the Isle of Man. I'm an extremely proud Manxman. And when you talk about cycling and the Isle of Man, there's one name that keeps coming up, and that's Mark Cavendish. It's fantastic to see his Tour de France this year. It's phenomenal, and to watch him win again is absolutely phenomenal, and it's fantastic to see as a Manxman. To see how he's inspired a generation of cyclists on the Isle of Man is incredible. We have a massive strength and depth as cyclists. It's incredible to see. One story that springs to mind is before I was a racing cyclist, I was always involved in cycling and watching. And when Mark Cavendish was in the World Championship jersey, he was doing a small Christmas race, we call a hamper race, around the Isle of Man. To be able to watch that, to see the legacy he's produced, that is kind of the work that I want to do, inspiring the next generation of people with type 1 diabetes, to inspire, educate and empower everyone around the world affected by diabetes, and to really make sure that what I do on the bike brings inspiration to other people and unlocks doors for them to be active. Thank you very much.
Sir Anthony Eden was my grandfather's younger brother.
How well did you know him?
I mean, I couldn't say well in many ways, but yeah, we had meetings and some memorable meetings actually. All these type of characters, they're memorable people. So, it's beating Elizabeth Taylor or Anthony Eden or Winston Churchill.
You met all these people.
Yeah, yeah. It's, of course, like Jane Goodall as well, who's still alive today, who's one of my superheroes, right? And who there, I really strongly recommend. You know, that is to me one of the great important people, and she has this great aura, and there are some of these people that have this great aura. Anthony Eden had a great aura about him. He had a great presence about him. He was definitely
left an impression.
Left a huge impression.
Was he a wine lover? I mean, the Prime Ministry were.
He married a cousin of Winston Churchill. So there wasn't a lack of juice, shall we say?
and you.
And they're still here today.
Well, we'll ask you in a moment what we're drinking here. But we did ask you whether there was any connection with cycling, and you said no initially. But then you revealed that you actually do enjoy spending afternoons watching the Tour de France, drinking a glass of rosé.
You have a spectacular contemporary photography, which allows you to appreciate it, and commentators which inform you, etc. I mean, you know, they focus in on a particular area or a particular castle or a particular, you know, it's wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, I love it. It's siesta time.
Absolutely,
that's with maybe a little glass of rosé as well, just to help the siesta go well.
that's part of the French way of life, you know, watching the Tour and falling asleep. I mean, we were comparing before, you know, recording the Tour de France in many ways, a test match in the old days when it lasted forever. You know, you had to have all the guys out before it was finished. The Tour is a little bit the same tradition, but. Also, what I like, when I found out the guy was making these wines I was loving so much was British or English, and it was a kind of validation of my Anglophilia. Like I always found that very often, the Brits, as we call them, you know, kind of enhance the beauty of my country. And it's once again, I'm not talking about Entente Cordiale or all that, all these kind of things, but very often I find, you know, the inputs of guys with another background, another history are great to develop a land and to resurrect it. And the English very often in Dordogne or in other places, they've done a lot of good to France. Well, sometimes in the very old days, it was not the case.
I was going to ask. I mean, how, apart from Francois, who's obviously sympathetic, how did the French respond to a British winemaker in France?
Yeah, profound subject. When I started rejuvenating life in the soil here, I had to bring in thousands of tons of manure, right? And so when you bring in thousands of tons of manure, right, that is in English. Oh, we're doing this in English. We've been talking in English, right? So that is thousands of tons of steaming shit. Okay, right. So when
just
you
a metaphor.
No, this is real. When you're bringing in thousands of tons of steaming shit on the edge of a French village in your English. Okay, right. Oh, hello. Anyway, so... I think all relationships in France. I thought your comments there to me, for a lot of other things which I do on a non-for-profit side, right? Because we're a B Corp company here, and so we have a lot of other actions which are involved in societal actions, right? I think your comments are a very interesting, very profound, and I think we have an absolute massive work to do with understanding human relations cross-border and stop closing the borders help us find the workers that want to work. Come on, come on. We're a nomadic species. The humans are a nomadic species. For God's sake, you know, stop this. Stop this stupid, you know, which is killing so many people and leaving so many people. And we don't have enough workers, huh? We don't have enough people to help us. We don't have the right amount of manual labor and people who want to work the way we should be working our land, to help our land be more sustainable for the future, to help our land be more sustainable for future generations, right? So I thought your point is a profound point, right? But I still think that the way people treated me here, despite me leaving thousands of tons of steaming shit on the edge of their village, right, is now we are in an appellation which is called Cru la Livinière, right? And Cru la Livinière was the first Cru appellation of the Languedoc.
Well, I'll ask you about these two wines in a moment, but you're in a very remote part of the world, you know, and I guess there aren't a lot of young people in this immediate area. So, yeah, workers, where do they come from?
It's very difficult. It's very difficult, and that's it, and that's what we need, and that's why you need to open up the borders. You need to not open up the borders in any way, but we need different workers. We need people to be out there with manual tools, right? As you would well know, the Scottish farmers need to have hand raspberry pickers. Right. You know, if they don't come from Poland, where are they going to come from? And excuse me, as there are a number of breweries in England which own a number of pubs, which today are wondering where they're going to get their staff because they don't have any French, Spanish, Italian, Polish, etc. students who are willing to wait tables. But the English aren't willing to do it. It's all the same. We've got to spread out. We've got to spread out.
Brexit. I hear a hint of Scottish in your accent.
No. The point is, that's because it's the end of the day.
You're watching the Tour de France all right,
yeah. We're watching the Tour de France drinking too much rosé. But no, but we have to stop this. We must learn to live together with everybody. And we must learn that every microorganism is important. And we are all interconnected with that, right? And there is nobody worse or nobody better, and we have to work towards that. Otherwise, it's more difficult and more dangerous for our environment.
Wine is a great way to interconnect. I mean, you know, between people, species, and so what have we been drinking there, Robert?
So Vermentino is it's called Rôle. Mm-hmm. In France, mm-hmm. Right? Provençal. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very Mediterranean grape variety. I work with a grower here which has got a beautiful plot, which is actually quite high up, and for this area is about 150 meters in altitude. But it's still got a very distant sea view. And a delicious wine, which we don't have here right now, by the way. So anybody who's listening to this, don't think we do have this because we don't. But it's absolutely delicious with oysters, right? So it's delicious with shellfish. That is a glorious shellfish wine, the Vermentino. And then we've been drinking a Zulu Chardonnay. Zulu, which is the name of our zero sulfur added Chardonnay, white wine, organic, obviously, of course, and no sulfur added. Just to, yeah. Well, I don't know what you feel about it, but there we go.
No, it's brilliant. I mean, you know, you were talking about Chardonnay and the way, you know, Chardonnay was kind of your introduction into the world of wine. But what you're making of Chardonnay now is kind of I won't say revolutionary, but is something else for sure. But the range of wines you're making as well is amazing because, as you said, I mean, you've got all varieties of organic wines. You've got reds with lots of body. You've got reds with lots of fruit. You have rosé, which are very fresh in the same time. I mean, how do you manage to produce all this on this, well, limited territory?
Oh, because we're in the Languedoc, And because my job is to encourage people to produce more organic grapes. And so if I'm encouraging them to produce organic grapes, I've also got to buy their grapes to make some wine. And that's what I do. So, and that's what we do with the group that I work with I'm working in within the cooperative structure. I'm nervous to get into this conversation too deeply because it's a deep conversation. But yeah, I'm working with about 40,000 hectolitres of organic grapes today in the Languedoc area alone. Mm. Right, so we're the largest, probably the world's largest organic producer. Working with the French company Invivo. Mm-hmm. Right, and Invivo is France's largest farmer, France's largest cooperative farmer. So yeah, we're doing a lot of things to encourage more organic farming and to encourage more organic growing grids. But not that organic is the only way, huh, François?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, come on, let's. No, but I think that's important. It's not to be a sort of organic messiah, not to be sort of this. You know, organic, this is organic, is the best thing in the world. You know, you got to do this. You know, come on. Organic is a step in the right direction, right? Let's take the step in the right direction. And then let's learn from it. And then let's, grow further.
You have a kind of, I don't know how to put it, but kind of political implication. Maybe it comes from your family. But, I mean, you were an actor of COP21, you were invited to talk about new ways of growing stuff. Where are you now in this fight and in this struggle, in this quest?
We continue. No, but we continue. You know, we have to continue to do it, and I don't like describing it as a fight, huh? I like describing it as a meeting, as a discussion where we're exposing each other and we're looking at each other and we're discussing with each other. I mean, it's all about that life road, huh? Which we've got to take. What I do understand now is that when you point to people. And you make people more aware of what's going on, which is simple, okay? And I said to you earlier, I was embarrassed, right, to not recognize how important live soil was to the taste of grapes.
Hmm.
Did you hear that, right? And I was embarrassed about that. Well, there's a lot of people still that don't make that connection. There's a lot of people which don't understand that tree which you're sitting under, right, is alive and knows you're sitting under it.
Yeah, but in a way, there's a message of hope in the fact that you managed to make such good wines in such an environment, well, in the environment that was your environment when you came here, which shows that in a number of years it's possible, and maybe, well, you make it sound easy, but to overturn the situation and turn that soil into great wine.
Thank you. No, but honestly, thank you. I mean, that's great, but that's what we want to do, and I believe you're right. Is that actually it's the same thing about talking about balance, right? When you're talking about balance in nature. You're talking about balance in the fruit which is produced. That can make great wine. And a balanced wine tastes good, right? And so a balanced fruit tastes good. A balanced person is an enjoyable person to be around. This is all about that. And so, yeah, we're striving towards that. But we don't know everything. We're continuing to learn, right? We are aware and we are looking around what's happening, and we love life, right? And we want to respect all living forms. That's important.
Well, thank you very much indeed to Robert Eden, who was a fantastic host, and it was great to meet him and to hear his story. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Kilometre Zero. It was produced by Adam Bowie.